With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. I'm your host, Richie Billing, and today I'm delighted to bring our latest panel event, which was a deep dive into the world of literary agents, querying agents, and getting books traditionally published with the brilliant science fiction and fantasy literary agent, Laura Bennett. We had an awful lot of questions from the community on query letters, so a big chunk of the panel discussion is about that. We also talk about writing a synopsis, which is a lot trickier than you think. And we also go over some common misconceptions that are often peddled about the internet, all to do with literary agents. So it's a very, very informative chat. And if you're approaching the stage of querying an agent, it's definitely a must listen. Before we dive in, just a quick reminder to subscribe or follow the show if you don't want to miss any future episodes. And if you'd like to come to our next live panel event, you can only do so through our Discord community, so be sure to click the link in the description and you'll get a quick invite along with lots of other handy resources to do with creative writing and fantasy fiction. If you'd like us to do more episodes and keep on doing what we're doing at the minute, then your support is greatly appreciated, and you can do that by sharing this episode with anyone who you think may be interested, and also leaving us a quick rating or review on the likes of the Spotify mobile app or on iTunes. If you'd like to get access to more fantasy writing related resources, like writing classes on world building and editing a fantasy novel, then check out our Patreon page. It's packed with loads of resources and lots of different tiers to choose from. And again, this is a great way to support us and to help us keep doing what we're doing. Now it's time to get on with today's show. And I'm delighted to introduce Johnny and Lucy, two members from our community who join me on the panel. And of course, the brilliant Laura Bennett from the Liverpool Literary Agency. Let's get started then. Thank you very much for joining me. It's great to have you here, Laura and Lucy. And Johnny, I think the three of us, the reason why I invited Johnny and Lucy to take part is because we're all basically going through this querying process or approaching it. And Laura, it's brilliant to have you with us. So why don't we start off with a bit of introductions? Lucy, do you want to introduce yourself first?
Sure, yeah. So I'm Lucy McLaren. I'm a fantasy author. My debut, Awakening, The Commune's Curse, Book 1, came out in May last year from Santa Fe Writers Project. But yeah, I'm an unagented author, so I'm very interested in getting Laura's tips and advice on the querying process, which I'm hoping to be approaching towards the end of this year.
There you go. Johnny?
Hey everyone, great to be back with you, Richie, and everyone. I am currently writing an epic second world science fantasy that I'm getting ready to query to literary agents probably in the new year once I finish with my critique group and get through a good round of edits on everything. So yeah, I'm just excited to be here and get some insights and hopefully, you know, share some for us writers as well, because it's an intimidating thing and it's great to be here with everybody to support each other in that process. So thanks for having
me. Oh, thanks for joining us. And Laura, thank you very much. You want to introduce yourself?
That's so awkward bit, isn't it? hello, I'm Laura. I'm an agent at the Liverpool Literary Agency. We're still quite new. The agency has been going for about 3 years now, and I've been an agent for about a year and a half, early last year. And I only represent science fiction fantasy. So don't ask me things about anything outside of that.
Very good. It's brilliant to have you. It's because, like Johnny just said there, it is a little bit intimidating. I've worked with the indie press before, but I've never sort of approached an agent. And I'm just finished my novel now, and I'm going through this process. I have loads of questions and a lot of imposter syndrome, but you've got to go into it with a bit of sort of bravado and a bit of a fuck it attitude, haven't you? So could you, I think a good place to start, because a lot of people just send us questions about like what it's like, the time frames that are involved. And I think that all comes in, we can all be explained by a bit of an idea of what it's like to be an agent and what you're up against. So do you fancy telling us a bit about that to start?
Yeah. So like I was saying before, you have to take my experience with a little bit of a grain of salt, because my way of approaching things and the way that I am is very different to what most agents are going to be, because most agents are probably down in London and they have an office and they're with a big agent, you know, a big agency. My agency is literally two of us and I work from home, and my full-time job is looking after my two-year-old. So she was two on Friday.
Oh, happy birthday.
She's, yeah, I've had a very busy weekend. So is anyone who has kids will appreciate the fact that my day is spent looking after the two-year-old, and then agenting kind of fits in around that.
Yeah.
And I read some, you know, from what I've spoken to other agents, it takes about 5 years to build up a career as an agent. So any agent who is either not at a big agency or is just starting their career probably either has another job or a side gig or multiple side gigs.
Yeah.
Which is why you'll see sometimes agents offering editing services or things like that. I mean, you have to be careful with those because some agents are shady with it, and we can talk about that another time if you want to. But that's why, because agenting, because we only get paid on commission.
Yeah.
It takes a long time to build it up, because if you think about the fact that everything's years in advance. So if I sell a book today, it's going to come out in a year and a half. So I'm going to see no money from it until, you know, whenever the first, if there's an advance, when the first bit of the advance comes through, or if there's no advance, whenever the book comes out. So it's a hard career to get into unless you've got some way of supporting yourself already. Of course, starting at big agencies, I think some of them probably get a salary. But I know some agents that are at agencies that don't, they just get commission. So there's that. There's a lot of reading. A lot of reading.
Yeah.
And once you build up a client list, so I have 15 clients now, and mostly they produce maybe a book a year. So that's roughly a book a month that I'm needing to read for each of my clients, and do a first pass of editing, and then work on the pitch for that, and then get it out to editors. I'm having meetings with editors. I'm looking at contracts. So the kind of the more successful you are as an agent, the more work you have, right?
Yeah.
Although once you get a client under contract, it's nice because then they're just working away on their book. And it's great if they get like a two-book contract, because then they can work away on the two books and they just kind of over there doing their thing. But I also act as a bit of a therapist and a bit of an agony aunt and support. I'm a very involved agent, so I chat to my office quite a lot. I have a Discord server just for my authors, so we all talk about, you know, what they're working on and if they've got any issues, and they can contact me whenever, sort of thing. I think some agents probably aren't quite as hands-on as that, but I was explaining this to one of the editors I talked to recently, because I've grown up being in internet communities. So I've grown up being, you know, I played Star Wars Galaxies, and then I played World of Warcraft, and then I played Knights of the Old Republic and ran a guild. So I'm very used to that online world and talking a lot to people online and having a relationship with people online. So to me, that's very natural to be chatting to somebody on Twitter or Discord or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm very much, I like to be approachable. Like, one of my authors, she tweeted something about how now I get to see her being unhinged in emails, and she puts lots of exclamation points because she's not agonizing over every email that she sends me anymore. Which is how I prefer it to be. Like, I'd rather they like sent me 50 Discord messages with a million exclamation marks rather than be worried about what they were saying. Does that answer the question? I kind of get on a ramble about something.
No, yeah, I think basically you get an idea of what it's like. You've got an awful lot of work to do and not a lot of time to do it. And I think that's going to be why it, like, people like concerned when they say like, oh, there's a 6 month turnaround time for like a query.
The other side of that as well is we have that as well. So I've sent out submissions to editors, and the shortest time is generally a month, 2 months. I've got books that have been out for a year and I still haven't got an answer from people. So it's a backlog as well. So if I've got a book out on submission and I get a similar book, I literally can't take it because then I'd be in competition with the book that I already have out. Even if that book's been out for 6 months.
I think that's it takes us nicely onto querying, because this is where I think about 80% of the questions that we received was all about how to query an agent and what kind of things do agents like. So Johnny, I think you had some really good questions about the querying process. Do you want to
I think something definitely that I just have done a lot of research and listened to several podcasts where they talk to a lot of different agents and just kind of humanizing them and like, don't be scared of agents. You're trying to find somebody to build a relationship with. So how do you suggest, you know, what are some things that really stand out to you in the, you know, either good or bad in queries that you see, like maybe some of the pitfalls that people tend to fall into? Or, you know, you just talked about one of your authors being more casual and like being able to show themselves in that. But obviously, you know, you want to do that in your query and show them that, but you know, you guys are humans too. So just kind of taking down that barrier. But what are some things that you really like when you see a good query?
With a query, you want the agent to be able to get an idea of what is there quickly. So I like to have, this is how I always kind of suggest, and if I'll send you a link later that I did like a blog sort of post on how to write a query letter on our website. So I'll find that for you guys at some point. But it's I like to have like what I call the marketing information first, which is what genre is it? What age is it? How many words is it? And what are the themes? Just quickly, and maybe your comp titles. So, you know, this is a 110,000 word adult fantasy that has themes of loss and betrayal, and it's similar to Neil Gaiman, Brandon Sanderson, something like that in your first quick thing. Because then when I'm having to look through emails quickly, I can go, okay, that's too long, or I don't do that genre, or, you know, that kind of thing. And unfortunately, it sounds very cold, but sometimes there are things that you just have to do and reject, because it's not my genre.
And that's important too for people, because it's not personal. Like it's, and they're never going to understand what your reasoning is, right? Because you might just have a book that's similar to it on your list. So just not taking that rejection personally.
Oh yeah,
doesn't mean your work is bad. I think that's something good as authors to remember, because you know you probably don't know what the reasoning is behind it. So you know.
And the thing is, it's all very subjective as well. And what I don't get gripped by, someone else could find amazing. That's why it can be. And that kind of is why, to go off another tangent, that's sometimes why we don't give feedback, because sometimes the feedback is so subjective, it wouldn't help the author, because it's literally just, this isn't quite for me. And I can't put my finger on why, like without it, you know, there's no point in me giving feedback that would then lead to a change when it's subjectively good. It's just.
Also, I think it's good for us as writers to remember that this is all free work that you guys are doing. Like, you're not getting paid for any of this. You're expecting a personalized response with, like, query feedback. It probably isn't, you know, if you get that, that's amazing. It means they care. That's actually a good sign that there was something about it that probably spoke to it. Because otherwise, you don't have time to do it, I'm sure, with everything that's in your slush pile waiting to be read.
I always try and give feedback on any fulls that I get, because I think if I ask for a full and then agreeing to read at least, you know, the first quarter, if not more, and give some kind of feedback, I wouldn't, you know, I don't ghost on fulls. I think some people do, unfortunately.
And
unfortunately
I've been you've requested of them, right?
Yeah, like I'm really slow right now. I've got like 3 fulls in my inbox staring at me every time I open my inbox, because I've just had a load of client work come up and toddler and everything. And but I will get to them and I will give them some feedback, and you know, but I've been really stingy about asking for fulls this time around, because when I first opened for queries, I asked for too many fulls and just couldn't get through them all. Whereas now I've been really like. Has to really grab me. So like marketing information, a good blurb. You want a good blurb that tells you character, the challenges, a little bit about the world, the kind of thing you'd have on the back of the book, right? And then an author bio. I like to know why the author has written this book, why this person has written this book. Yeah. What do you connect with in the book? Tell me that.
Yeah.
And I like to know a little bit about the person, you know, what it doesn't have to be loads, but maybe what job you do, maybe a little bit about your background, that kind of thing.
I suppose it's a partnership, isn't it? You wanna learn about that person as much as about the book. Yeah. Like, be able to work with each other. Yeah. Lucy, have you got any questions on querying?
I think you've already covered basically what would be an instant yes or no. I think it sounds like it's quite instinctual for you, like when you read something, you know whether it's going to be a possible yes or like an instant no. I remember reading about writing trends and people following those versus writing the story they want to. And I don't know whether this is more personal to agents, but whether you could comment on how important writing trends are, like following trends, whether that's even possible, because like you said, the publishing process is so slow that by the time a book actually comes out, that trend may have passed. But yeah, is that something that you look for at all when you get queries in?
What I usually have in mind is, can I sell this? So, and that's made up of a few different things. It's, is the writing solid? Am I passionate about this book? And do I have any editors in mind for it? So it's really good. So at the moment, fantasy romance is like massive. So if I get a fantasy romance in that then fulfills other criteria, I'm very, you know, I'm get excited about it. But I would never, ever recommend writing to trend, because if it takes you a year or two to write a book, chances are the trend will have gone. There's lots of trends that are timeless. So space opera, epic fantasy, everything comes back around. Like dystopian had gone out and now it's coming back in. Urban fantasy had gone out and then it's kind of not great now, but I think it's going to come back in. I think everything comes around. I think be prepared to shelve a book and work on something else if you're getting lots of form responses or it's not on trend, but don't write to trend. Does that make sense? So be prepared to be told, listen, this just isn't selling right now.
Yeah.
But don't try and write something that's on trend, because by the time you've written it, by the time you've edited it, and by the time you've got it in front of someone, and by the time it's getting in front of anyone else, you know, it's, we have to kind of get the crystal ball out as agents and you know, predict what's going to be, you know, and I get a lot, because I get a lot of my information when I'm talking to editors. So I have quite frequent meetings with editors, and I have catch-up meetings with editors and say, okay, what are you looking for at the moment? And find that out and then kind of go from there. So, and when I'm looking through queries and things, I kind of have in the back of my head, okay, what's big right now? But I also think, what could be big?
Yeah.
What's just so good that it doesn't matter if it's not big right now?
Yeah.
You know, what... You know, I've got, and I think editors are looking for the next big thing as well. And that's one problem with traditional publishing, with big publishers, is they need to be ready to embrace something that isn't big right now, but they could help make it big.
Yeah.
And I think that's happened. I think that's happened with Iron Widow. It happened with Legends and Lattes. It happened with The Book Eaters. None of those were like on trend. You know, yeah. Legends and Lattes has made cozy fantasy go whoop. Yeah.
don't write to trend, but you can't ignore the market, but also like it has to be the book, it has to be the story that you want to tell, right?
Because if you're not passionate about it, you're gonna write a crap book, aren't you? You know,
I don't know how you could write 100,000 words or something that you went into as well.
Yeah, well, when you said fantasy romance, I was like, god no, I could never write that, like it's just not my thing, it makes me want to cringe and like implode on the spot. I just can't write that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think it probably would come across in a writer's voice if they're trying to force something that's not right for them.
Yeah. And there's loads of stuff that's you know, people are looking for parent-child relationships. They're looking for you know, because The Last of Us has taken off. There's people are looking for sibling relationships. People are looking for I want to see all of the LGBTQ spectrum. So I want to see some ace people. I want to see some aromantic people. You know, you want to have all of it.
So that's great news for my story. but I did sort of have a specific question that I'm dealing with that I've kind of like would love a little perspective on. So like mine's going to be a long series, right? But I know that if you put in your book that it's like, hi, I have 9 books, like it's just hard to sell, like it's impossible to sell to anybody. But then they want these big things. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of we would say a catch 22. Like you can't win one because it's like they want these epic series that they could turn into television shows and movies and video games and make all that sub rights money and IP money on, but they don't want to pick it up at the beginning, you know, which I get, you know, it's like a risk reward thing. So how do you do that? Like, it's not going to change what I'm writing. It just means it's going to be harder for me to find the right agent for it and the right publisher.
I've had this come up. So I do agent one-to-ones where people basically pay to come and chat to me and whatever. And I don't put to, this has come up a lot because what the two most common things that comes up in fantasy and sci-fi is series and massive chonky books. And they're two things that aren't selling right now. With a series, my advice is either make the first one what we call a standalone with series potential.
Yeah.
So make the first one able to stand on its own with an ending, but the potential to carry on. Or go away and write another book, sell that, and then sell your big epic 9-book series once you've got a foot in the door. Both things are hard, and you know,
you could package a trilogy though, right? Like that's kind of a middle ground between that. Like you could
at the moment, duologies are the big thing.
Okay.
Because you're much more likely to get like a 2-book deal than a 3-book deal, and you're more likely to get.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get a 3-book or above deal right now.
I think from a business perspective as well. I think Adrian Tchaikovsky said it doesn't matter who you are, unless you're probably Brandon Sanderson. Like a series of books, the readership is just going to drop and drop and drop.
Yeah.
So the longer the series, it just seems like a bit of a you're not going to make any money on it.
Yeah. Well, one of the editors gave me a good thing, which was they like a series that is connected books. So like Discworld, where they're all,
yeah,
you can start anywhere in the series.
Like a shared universe.
Like a shared universe. That's one way to do it.
Yeah.
Because you can, if you walk into a bookshop and they've got book 4, but not book 2, but it doesn't matter because you can start anywhere, you'll pick it up. Whereas if you go into a bookshop and they've only got book 4 and none of the others, you're going to be like,
nice.
You know, keep it flexible. Or guess I'll go to Amazon, or, you know, whatever. Yeah. So once you get a foot in the door and you're established, then you know you get the big series.
Yeah.
If you lay Bardugo with your £10 million book deal, you know it's hard. It's hard to sell a series right now. It's
I don't mind an upstream swim, so maybe that's a punishment. But
you mentioned the word counts there, Laura. I was wondering what is a sort of, especially for like new authors, what is a good word count for people to sort of keep in mind?
So keep in mind, I only do YA and adult. So YA, you don't want to go too much, depending on the, so you can have like teen YA. I wouldn't go above about 80 to 90,000. If it's kind of in the crossover space, you're looking at about 100,000. And then adult, for me, once you get to 120, if you go over that, I'll start going, I was once quoted this by an editor that 140 was their cutoff point because after 140, it got too expensive to print.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't really take on debut authors over 140 because then the cost to, you know, ratios just got completely like they couldn't do it.
Would that come down, or do you think that like all printing costs have gone off?
Well, possibly, yeah. And even for ebooks as well, because it's the editing time as well. Because if you've got an editor, they can edit 2 80,000 word books in the space of time, you know. Urban fantasy, yeah. I mean, because space opera and epic fantasy need so much world building in, you can get away with more. But if it's like our world with a twist, then a little bit less, I would say.
Nice.
Like I said, 120,000 is a sweet spot for me. Like that's, you know, long enough to get the world building in, but not so long that it's too long.
Yeah.
But anywhere from like 90 to 120 is good, like a good amount.
Lucy, you had a great question about including something in a query letter about your sort of publishing history.
Yeah. So I was going to ask whether it makes any difference whatsoever if an author is already published. So it's probably, obviously personal to me, but I don't know, other people here are published, whether that be through self-publishing or through small press like myself. So does it make a difference to an agent if you put that in the query letter that, you know, you've already got a book out there? Does that mean much at all?
It does, because it shows that you've been through that process and that and the editing and the, you know, unless you're getting big numbers and big sales, it's probably not going to do much in terms of selling you to a big publisher.
Mm.
But it does, for me, if I see someone who's been published before, it kind of says to me, okay, they've been through that process, they can work with an editor, for a small batch, you can work with an editor, you can take, you know, it's good to know that you're experienced in being critiqued and having that feedback and working on it and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and small presses are great, you know, they're not going to take on someone who they don't believe in. So it shows that your writing quality is there. Yeah, it's a good thing to put in your query letter. And if you get, you know, if you're getting decent, if your book's got a few hundred reviews and 4 stars, put that in, because that's great, you know.
Yeah,
that's brilliant. As a writer with a small press or self-published, that's really good. So yeah, pop that in, you know. That's,
I suppose, it's a bit of proof, isn't it? Like that,
yeah,
people like what you create. So could be a good sway things sometimes.
Yeah, and I know some traditional publishers, the big publishers, obviously will take self-published things and then publish them. So like with TJ Clue and his stuff, they went back and got his self-published stuff and published it, you know.
Yeah, so we were chatting with a few Angry Robot authors, and one of them, Stacey McEwen, she was about to self-publish her book. I can't remember, it's called Chasm or something like that. And because she had such a huge TikTok following and the pre-order sales were so big for that book, Angry Robot just signed her up on the back of that. So it does, like, if you can prove it, like you say, it's business, isn't it? And if there's a chance that they can make money.
Because is that important too, Laura, like social media presence for your authors?
I don't mind. Like, if someone comes to me and they're like not on social media, it doesn't bother me, because the impact you have kind of as a single person is so small compared to the impact that you would have with a big publisher. It's good to know. It's definitely a selling point if someone is on social media and has a decent amount of followers and that sort of stuff, because the publisher will want to sort of know a little bit about it and they'll want to work with you on that. But yeah, you don't have to have like 200,000 followers or something for. I saw something. Oh, was it? Gosh, there was something going around about an agent saying that people had to have a certain amount of followers, and I was like, "What a load of politics!"
Yeah. So thinking that maybe it might make their job a bit easier because they don't have to promote it as much.
But I mean, the thing is, and I, you know, writing a book, the skills you need to write a book are so different to the skills you need to write a query letter or to go on social media or to. It's like, for me personally, even if I get a terrible query letter through, I still look at the sample pages, because I could just have someone who is an amazing fiction writer who can't market their book.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I can work on that. You know, if I get someone who's written an amazing novel, I can work on the rest of it, you know?
Yeah.
I think a lot of writers should take like a deep breath when it comes to querying too. Like, I've heard so many agents say similar things when they're being interviewed. Like, one agent even offered to a writer who put the wrong name in the query letter. Like, they called her a completely different agent.
Because
like, you know that like, it's querying is hard and that it's the actual book that matters.
I once left in dear editor on an analyst. And then I email them back going, oh my God.
Yeah, so, like, you're not going to reject something for a misplaced comma or a typo or anything like that. So yeah, I've heard that too. And it's good just to like give yourself a little grace and don't, you know, about that.
Yeah. I mean, you want your query letter to be the best that you can make it.
Yeah.
Don't worry too much. And I don't try and personalize it too much either, because if you're kind of combing through their Twitter and their manuscript wish list and trying to completely personalize it, they're probably not going to read it. Like, to be honest.
Yeah.
In a cool
Unless
way.
It's really authentic for you. Like, yeah. You really do.
If you've met them, or they've liked something that you've posted, or you've had some kind of personal contact with them, put that in. But if you've never interacted with them before, you can tell that someone's read your manuscript wish list by what they're sending you. You can, you know, if they said, if someone sent me crime, I'd be like, they've obviously not read my wish list. Goodbye. Like,
and I'm not sure, just in case everyone doesn't know, manuscript wish list is a website where you can actually look up literary agents. It shows what they're currently looking for, if they're open for submissions, and you can book time and stuff, right? Like for consultations and query reviews.
I think so.
Something else, but it is a really great tool, and I don't know of anything else like it. That authors can access to, like,
agents will post the link to it on their Twitter and things like that. And so you can tell that you've done your research because you're sending something that we're interested in. So don't worry about saying, I saw on your manuscript wishes that you're looking for X, Y, and Z. Don't worry about it, because we can tell that you've done the research.
Yeah. And that sounds like I say, it's a brilliant resource for anyone who's. So, would you be able to use that to find agents who have got like calls for submissions on at the moment and stuff like that?
I think so. I think you can.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they put out like a newsletter that when they're like, who's open for submissions. There's different like levels and different things that you can do.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice. It's a
really great resource. What is it? Manuscriptwishlist.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good. I'll put the link in the description for that as well, because that sounds great. I got a little question here, Laura, about things like short story publications and anthologies. Would that be included in a query for a novel, do you think?
Yeah, I'd put it in, because it shows that you've got, again, it shows that you've got that experience of getting out there and getting your work published.
Yeah. And another question just on querying and genres. Would you be interested in like genre mashups? Is that the kind of thing that people are looking out for, like the unique twists on things?
A lot of the editors I've spoken to recently have said they like things that cross genre.
Nice. There we go.
So I know science thrillers aren't very popular right now. That's the only one that's really hard sell at the moment.
But things like scientists.
Horror is really big right now, so fantasy horror, science horror, anything that crosses over into horror is a big thing right now, because horror, it looks like horror is going to have a bit of a nice. anything that crossover is fine.
Yeah, cool. Something I wanted to ask you about was the synopsis, because this is something that usually you have to include with the submission. So I mean, this, me and Johnny were just debating like all the different sort of definitions of what a synopsis is. Is it a summary of your story? Is it just a sort of an overview of like the character and the theme and stuff like that? Maybe, what was your insight on the synopsis?
So the synopsis is a very factual, very cold, very stripped back version of your plot.
Yeah.
One tip I always give is write your synopsis as you go along. Every time you finish writing a chapter, write a couple of sentences about what happens in that chapter. Okay. And do that as you go along, because that will help. Because if you get all the way to the end of your book and you go, oh crikey, now I've got to write a synopsis, it's horrendous.
it's amazing to me that you can write a book and then suddenly be like, what is that about? What did I just write?
Yeah,
so I'm writing that tip down right now. That is amazing.
It's a brilliant
tip. Is the kind of length do you look for in a synopsis?
Sorry, what?
Say length. That again. Like, how long should it be?
Between a page and two pages.
Okay.
About, depending on how long your book is and how many twists there are in the plot. It's like a simple one. You can, because you'll see some people say, "I want a one-page synopsis." To check the guide. Like,
yeah,
always check the guidelines. You know.
The synopsis should have all of your plot twists, all of the major
spoiler everything.
A summary should avoid that and kind of be similar to what you would see on a book text, but a little bit more
in your query letter. That is the blurb that you would see on the back of a book, and that is the place to get in your themes and your inspirations and your comp titles and everything else. Your synopsis is the factual. This happens, this happens, this happens, this happens. Just really, you know, bum, 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 bum. This this is what happens. I always say when you bring a character into your synopsis, write their name in capital letters.
Yeah.
And tell us their ages as well, if that's relevant. Because then when we're reading the synopsis, we can see where a character comes in for the first time very easily.
Yeah.
And it just makes it a little bit easier to read for us. Yeah, because your blurb in the query letter, you shouldn't really mention more than maybe one or two characters.
Yeah.
And then your synopsis, you can mention like all the main characters.
Nice. So what would you say for a blurb then? That's more of like a general overview.
That's your like you said, what you see on the back of a book.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, what have I got lying around here?
I've heard a good formula to use while you look is like character wants X but can't because of Y, and therefore Z happens. Like that's kind of a good basic formula to use.
And that shouldn't be more than two or three paragraphs.
Nice.
Synopsis, put in spoilers, blurb, no spoilers. Yeah. The blurb is, imagine someone's picking up the book and reading the back of the book. So if you spoil your twist, they'll be like, I'm not reading that, man.
Yeah. Like watching the trailer for a film, though.
Yeah. Synopsis, spoil all the things. Tell us everything. Tell us what happens to every single, you know, all the important characters. Tell us what happens in the end.
Nice. That's a really good tip. We mentioned a couple of things there. Manuscript wish list, and someone's just mentioned query manager as well. Are there any other good tips you've got for finding an agent or seeing who's looking for submissions?
It used to be go on Twitter, but Twitter kind of has gone now. there are still a lot of agents and editors on Twitter. There's still like quite a lot of us using it. There's, is it Publishers Marketplace? Let me double check that.
Yeah, I think that's
yeah, Publishers Marketplace. So you do have to pay to get like the premium stuff, but I think you can get so much of it free. And that you can look up editors and agents and you can see what deals are being made and things like that.
Oh, cool.
So when it might be, if you can afford it and if you want to, it might be worth signing up to it for the minimum time. And then you can literally search by deal makers. You can put in like fantasy top deals and you can see which agents have sold to editors. And then that can give you an idea of which agents are currently accepted in the genres that you're doing. And things like that. UK agents don't use it as much as US ones. US publishers tend to use it more. There's the bookseller as well. But again, that's a paid subscription because everything's paid. I think you can get like so many articles a month for free. So you can look at what rights are being sold. So look for like similar things to yours and that'll give you an idea of what agents to go for.
Oh, cool. You mentioned the US there. I mean, if you queried an agent in the US, would they cover you for UK markets as well? Because I've seen a few people who've got like agents for different countries and stuff like that.
Yeah. So we tend to sell, so we, big agencies have people in-house that do like translation rights and TV and film rights. We have like partnerships with other people that do it. But it's generally, you know, you sell world rights. It doesn't really matter where you are like anymore. It used to. But nowadays, thankfully, everything's kind of gone online and doesn't really matter where you are. Well, one of my writers is in Germany, another one's in America, so
it doesn't really matter. It's like a global industry now, isn't it?
Yeah. I think most agents are either in the UK or the US. Maybe some in Canada and Australia, but I think quite a lot are in, because of the way the publishing industry works in these countries, this is where the big publishers are. So,
yeah. We've had a question here. Do you think it's worthwhile querying agents in your country or people based in other countries? Or does it not matter?
Like, I don't think it matters. I mean, it's nice to have one in your country because you're more likely to be able to see them in person. And I think as well, it depends on your voice as well, because I have, some of my authors have got quite English voices in their work, if that makes sense. Like their books are set in England, their characters are English.
Yeah.
You know, I'm probably going to go to a UK publisher first because it's a, you know, that kind of book.
Yeah.
So if you've written quite a, a local book. Does that make sense? If you've written like a, you know, you're more likely to get an agent or who gets that. Like,
yeah,
you know.
I think another question that a lot of people have asked is about the kind of terms that you would strike up with an agent. And I think when we had a chat about this on the podcast, there was something that I didn't know about, which I found really interesting, is that when you work with an agent, is it just for a particular book that they get a percentage of the sales relating to that book, but not, like, say, if you self-published another book, you wouldn't, that would be treated as like a separate thing. So could you tell us a bit about like how contracts and agreements are usually structured?
Yeah. So it's basically what we sell, we get a percentage of. Yeah. So if you go away and self-publish a book that we have nothing to do with, we don't get anything. We don't touch that. I know some of our writers self-publish as well. They tend to do it under a different name, just so it's not kind of confusing the waters. Although, like, yeah. Publish, you know, they might publish self-publish crime, and they've gone out on submission with a fantasy. Because it's just a bit of money, isn't it? Because, you know, writing's hard to make.
Yeah.
A livable career. So if you can go and self-publish a few, say, a quick books, I don't want to, because self-publishing is hard, but you might, you know, you can do something that's a bit off trend, or you can bash out, like, you know, a romance that's only 50,000 words long, or whatever, you know, something short, or novellas, or, you know, something that you can sell for,
yeah,
whatever, while you're on submission for a year, you know.
Yeah,
it's a bit of money coming in.
Definitely, yeah.
And we wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't touch that.
Nice. What kind of a percentage do you usually negotiate, or does it vary?
I'm going to get this wrong if I do it from memory. I think it's 15% for... I'm going to look at the contract and have a look, and I will tell you exactly what it is.
Yeah. I've heard 15% is pretty standard.
Yeah.
The industry.
Yeah, off the top of my head, that's what it is. But I will actually take the time to get the contract up and tell you for certain.
Is there anything, while we're on contracts, I know somebody in my writing group had a question, I think it was Tyler, about if there's anything that people should look out for that may be predatory in the industry, like from a writer-agent contract, like what are some of those things for people to be aware of?
Okay, let me answer the percentage one, and then I will absolutely bang on about that. Okay, so for UK, 15%, outside UK, 20%. Radio, television, film, 20%. So it's 15 to 20%, depending on what it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty standard.
Nice.
And of that, quite often, the individual agent will then get a percentage of that, and the agency will get a percentage of it.
I see.
Because the actual
commission, and then...
Yeah, because the agency has to pay for the website, the email, the events, the everything else. Like, the agency has overheads, and then... Yeah, so yes, so predatory. So one of the big things that I would look out for is any agents who offer paid editorial services. I think I mentioned it earlier, it can be like an alternate revenue stream on the side for agents, but you want to look out for ones who basically cross the streams. So if you queried an agent and they said, no, I'm not going to accept you, but you could pay me to edit your book, just run, just go, because that's predatory. That's... or kind of making it sound like if they edit it, they would then take it on.
Yeah.
If you pay them. Mm-mm. No way. No. We do ours through other companies, basically. And if I was going to do any editing work, I would make sure it was ironclad in terms of not crossing over with my agenting.
Yeah.
So that's look out for. Anything else to look out for? I know, because you have to look out for like if any small press basically says they want all the rights ever, look out for that. So if you're offered a contract by a small press, make sure you're happy with the percentages and keep back the rights that you don't want to sell. So you want to keep back like TV and film rights.
Yeah.
If they don't have a way of producing the audio, keep back the audio rights. If they don't have a way of translating, keep back the translation rights, because you can then go and sell those somewhere else? Because like some people who get self-published and do really well then go to an agent and say, hey, can you sell the translation rights for me? Or hey, can you sell the audio rights for me? Or hey, can you sell the paperback, you know, keep hold of the rights that you can. If any publisher says, no, we want all the rights forever, that's generally not great.
Lucy, that's a great recommendation you just posted in the chat. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so the Writer Beware website is really good for keeping up to date with dodgy publishers, shmagents, as they call them, hybrid publishers. I think basically the main thing I see is anyone that tries to charge you upfront for stuff is generally
yeah. Money should flow from the publisher to the writer.
Yeah.
Not the other way around. You know, if they approach you and say, well, you just have to pay 50% of the costs to no.
Yeah.
That's, you get into like vanity presses then.
No. It's a shame. You can see why these places have sort of cropped up, because it's these people like are writing books and it's the dream to get published and to see it on the shelves, and it's just preying on them.
Yeah.
Sort of hopes.
I mean, my advice would be if you say you approach a publisher and they say, right, you've got to pay us $5,000 and we'll publish your book, go and self-publish it, because you can spend that money on self-publishing it and then you control it and you own it.
Yeah. It's a lot
so
more
if you have the money to spend on publishing your book, self-publish it, because, you know, pay an editor, pay, you know, $3,000 of that for an editor, so many hundred for an artist, you know.
And if you are able to afford it, it's not a bad idea to, you know, utilize those services and pay for an agent to review your query letter. It's great to get somebody who does it every day to give you that feedback, and that's something you're seeking out. So I wouldn't be wary of those things, of investing in that if that's something you're really serious about.
The two companies we use are Jericho Writers and I'm in Print, and they're both very good. They have all kinds of paid services for writers.
Awesome.
Oh.
And they're both legit and very nice people. So
yeah, Affairs of Jericho Writers, they've got a great name. And do they do like feedback on query letters as well?
I think so, yeah. Oh, cool. They've got like a whole, both of them have got like a whole range of services that you can get, like packages, and you can get written feedback, you can get verbal feedback, you can get editing, you can get all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. And I love to give a free option too. And I think that, you know, your writing group, your critique group is a great place to go, because it's people who are already familiar with your work or beta readers. If they're a good beta reader that you've had, like they're going to be, sometimes they're so much better at summarizing your story than you are. Like,
I'll tell you where it's weirdly great for query letters is Reddit Pub Tips. Have you guys seen? Pub Tips. Let me double check that's the subreddit. They do query letter critiques, and they're actually really good.
Oh, that's awesome!
We
love a free resource around here too, right?
I think it is just pub. r/pubtips. Because
nice.
I sometimes post on there if I have time. Sometimes I have a quick look at the query letters and comment on it myself. They want me to do an AMA at some point. They asked me to do an AMA, and I was like, wait until I've signed my first contract and then I will come and do one, because then I will feel like a proper agent. So I may pop up on there doing an ask me anything at some point.
Nice.
But they do you can post your query letter and people will critique it and give good, and the advice that I've seen on there has been good.
Nice. Are you good?
That's awesome.
Is there, I'm not sure if anyone else has any other questions for Laura, but I think not everything that I've got listed from everybody. Lucy, Johnny, any more questions?
Not that I can think of.
Very comprehensive chat, Laura. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
How can we find out a bit more about you, Laura?
Well, what do you want to know?
Well, about the agency, if anyone wanted to query, have you got any submission calls coming up anytime soon?
No. Sorry. Claire and I are both swamped. I don't think, if I reopen, it's going to be late in the year, I think, because I'm just like
Yeah.
Because my toddler, I used to get about an hour a day. Well, she's actually started napping again now because she stopped napping and then I had like no time. And we put her in nursery one morning a week. So I'm just about managing to catch up with things now. Claire has two children and a part-time job and is an agent. We just have like no time.
Yeah.
Hopefully later in the year we'll reopen at some point.
Yeah. Follow on Twitter. I think you usually post a calls for submissions on Twitter, yeah, don't you?
Claire only accepts writers from the north of England unless it's through agent one-to-ones or something that she's asked for. I take writers from anywhere in the UK.
Awesome.
When we reopen.
There you go.
And then I'll take people from outside the UK if it's someone that I've asked for. Nice. Just because literally we have to just keep our submissions small because there's two of us and you know, yeah, you read so much.
Definitely quickly get out of hand. And Lucy, Johnny, thank you so much for taking part. How can we find a bit about YouTube as well?
Thank you. It's been really interesting chat, Laura. Thank you for your time. So main place you can find me, author website is lucyamclarenauthor.com. And main place I'm using at the moment is Instagram because Twitter is, you know, terrible. So it's Lucy_A_McLaren.
Nice. Johnny?
Hey, it was great being here with you. Yeah, you can find me. I'm on Twitter-ish, new on Twitter, building that writing network on there. But it's at Johnny Lee Altair, JohnnyLeeAltair. So, yeah. Feel to follow me or find us on the Discord at Fantasy Writers Toolshed.
yeah. And thank you everyone for joining us. It's been a really great session. Laura, I've been making notes as we've been going along. It's been fantastic. So thanks very much, everyone, and we'll catch you all soon. Thank you so much, Laura. We're indebted to you for joining us for that panel discussion. It was really informative. We had lots of people attend the live event. And if you'd like to watch the video version, you can check that out on YouTube now by searching for the Fantasy Writers Toolshed just in the usual search bar. And be sure to subscribe as well, because we do post a lot of videos on there that support what you can hear on this podcast. Don't forget, if you'd like to gain access to our live events, then join our Discord community. The best way to do that is to click the link in the description. You'll also enlist on our bi-weekly newsletter, which I share all the latest resources, the latest podcast episodes, plus lots of other great resources like writing guides, tips, classes, books, and community announcements. So if you want to stay in the loop, be sure to join us by clicking that link. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please consider giving us a quick rating on the Spotify mobile app or a review on iTunes, and a share on social media helps us out an awful lot because we don't have a marketing budget like some podcasts. So we rely heavily on the goodwill of our loyal fans and followers. So thank you very much. It really does mean a lot. Don't forget, you can check out our Patreon page too for access to lots more guides, resources, like writing classes and books on writing fantasy too. So it's well worth checking out. And that is about all for today. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back on the 14th of July. Where's the year gone? With a brand new episode. And it's going to be an author interview with a very talented individual. I'm not going to say any more than that. But I think you may have enjoyed his books in the past. And he's got a lot of insights to share. So be sure to stick around, and until then, keep on scribbling.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at cargurus.com. Go to cargurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CARGURUS.com. Cargurus.com.